Hallo und willkommen in Episode 3 unseres Kongressjournals aus Alpbach. Hier sind wieder Anna Wallner.
Mein Name ist Eva Winreuter.
Ja, und hoffentlich starten Sie diesen Tag mit einem ebenso guten Gefühl wie wir. Denn was Sie da gerade hören konnten, war eine Jam-Session, die diese Woche im alten Alpbacher Feuerwehrhaus stattgefunden hat. Dort haben ein paar Stipendiatinnen und Stipendiaten kurzerhand Kontrabass und Gitarre in die Hand genommen, ein Keyboard an einen Verstärker angeschlossen und darauf losmusiziert. Die Lieder wurden durch Zurufe bestimmt und die Menge, die hat einfach mitgesungen. Ja, in Alpbach macht sich in diesen ersten Tagen durchaus so etwas wie Ferienlagerstimmung bereit. Menschen aus der ganzen Welt kennenlernen, gemeinsam Ideen erarbeiten, wild diskutieren und am Abend abhängen, singen oder tanzen. Die sozialen Events sind dabei mindestens genauso wichtig wie die offiziellen. Und das Fan-C-Team, das Forum Alpbach Network Committee, ist äußerst engagiert, wenn es darum geht, kurzfristig etwas auf die Beine zu stellen.
Denn lange im Voraus geplant ist absichtlich wenig, wie uns Matthias Bauer vom Fan-C erzählt hat.
Also hier in Alpbach ist ja das Schöne, dass so viele Leute da sind, die selber was machen wollen. Also unsere Social Events sind in den meisten Fällen eigentlich die Ideen anderer Leute. Da sehen wir uns selber eher als Facilitators, die schauen, dass die Rahmenbedingungen dafür passen, weil im Endeffekt dieses Netzwerk, also dieses ganze Forum hier bespielt sich selbst. Also ich laufe normalerweise den ganzen Tag herum zwischen den verschiedensten Players, die da hier irgendwie befriedigt werden müssen, dass die das alles mit rechten Dingen zugeht. Aber wenn das funktioniert, dann organisieren sich die einzelnen Stipendiatinnen oder die Clubs, die es hier gibt, das meist selbst. Wir hatten Filmscreenings, Musiksessions, Pubquiz, Kamingespräche, Diskussionsrunden und da fallen mir gerade sicher 10 Sachen noch nicht ein.
Und falls sich jetzt wer fragt, ob er oder sie als ganz gewöhnliche Forumsteilnehmer oder Speaker ebenso willkommen sind bei solchen Events, auch wenn die gar nicht im offiziellen Forumsprogramm aufscheinen. Aber natürlich sind sie.
Es wird auf jeden Fall ein hauptsächlich von Stipendiatinnen dominierter Raum bleiben, weil im Endeffekt das macht ihn aus. Wir freuen uns aber über jeden Besuch. Und ja, Alpbach ist, hier geht es um Inklusivität, da wollen wir keine Tür zumachen.
So join us in this fantastic endeavor.
Presse Play. Was in Alpbach wichtig ist. Der Presse-Podcast aus Alpbach wird unterstützt von der Erste Group.
Ja, es ist also wirklich schon viel los hier, aber nicht, dass Sie den Eindruck bekommen, in Alpbach dreht sich plötzlich alles nur mehr um Pubquizzes, Jam-Sessions oder Hüttenpartys. Nein, den meisten Teilnehmerinnen und Teilnehmern geht es vielmehr um das größere Ganze, zum Beispiel darum, Europa zu retten. Das merkt man auch daran, was gerade in den kommenden Tagen zum Beispiel für Aktionen mitten im Ort und auf der Straße geplant sind. So organisiert Fridays for Future am heutigen Freitag zur Mittagszeit um 13 Uhr, dann, wenn es wahrscheinlich wieder besonders heiß ist, wie bereits im Vorjahr einen Klimastreik. Das diesjährige Thema lautet Stopping Carbon Bombs, wie zum Beispiel die East African Crude Oil Pipeline. Dabei wird übrigens auch das Forum selbst kritisiert. Am Sonntag findet dann wieder die sogenannte Alpbach Pride Parade statt, die durch den Ort ziehen wird. Und außerdem wird eine Petition für Gratis-Verhütungsmittel wie Kondome gelauncht. Darüber sollten wir dann noch einmal genauer sprechen. In dieser Folge aber geht es um ein anderes, stets ziemlich heiß diskutiertes Thema, die Migration.
Denn in unserer heutigen Folge lernen Sie gleich Ian Golding kennen. Er ist Professor für Globalisierung und Entwicklung an der Universität Oxford. Außerdem war er Direktor für Politik bei der Weltbank und Berater von Nelson Mandela. In Alpbach leitete er ein Seminar zum Thema technologische Souveränität. Und darüber wollten wir auf der Terrasse des Alpbacher Hofes auch sprechen. Aber dann kam es ganz anders. Denn um mit dem technologischen Fortschritt von Ländern wie den USA mithalten zu können, sollten wir in Europa Migranten viel mehr willkommen heißen, sagt er zu mir. Ein heiß umstrittenes Thema, das muss ich Ihnen ja nicht erklären. Aber während es in Europa eine generelle Angst vor Migranten gibt, sieht Golden auch die Chance, die sie bringen. Und das hat tatsächlich auch etwas mit Innovation zu tun. Aber hören Sie selbst.
The other thing we can do to really speed up R&D in Europe, research and development, is of course be welcoming of foreigners. It's a dangerous topic, but we need to understand why the US is at the forefront of technological progress. One was sort of an accident of history. A lot of people fled Europe during the Second World War, including Einstein and many others went to the US. But it's a bigger thing. Try and think of an iconic Silicon Valley company that is not first or second generation migrant founded. All, including Google and many, many others, are first, second generation. Foreigners, because they are risk takers and because they are much higher levels of innovation and investment in their new countries, 10, and you see this in the statistics, are more likely to innovate. You know that diversity enhances innovation. All the management literature tells us that.
So you say people that have migrated have a bigger tendency to be more innovative because they have to adapt and they just bring new perspectives and new point of views in a new environment.
Yes, but it's also, it goes back even further. The people that tend to migrate are people that are prepared to take risk. I mean, it's a terrible thing to migrate, to leave one's family and community and so on. People normally don't do it out of choice. And if you look at the data on startups in Europe, you see this coming through much more, a higher representation that you would expect from their share of the population. It's also, I guess they just feel they have to make income. And this is very strong in some of the most successful cities. I mean, London, for example, which is the engine of the UK economy, double the productivity of the rest of the UK, is 30% migrant. And this is true of many dynamic cities. It's also, of course, true of San Francisco and Palo Alto and New York and many other places.
In Austria, we have a totally different discussion about migration because kind of like the stereotypical view for many people is that all the migrants that come, that are they are low educated and they are kind of like slowing the country down and not bringing anything to it. What do you think?
Well, it's partly a question of who's migrating. So skilled and unskilled people is one sort of question. And obviously skilled migrants have a better ability in a way to contribute. But it's also interesting when you look at not necessarily the migrants themselves in their first year, but after 5 years or after 10 years. And what's noticeable about those that went to the US, of course, and were part of the big innovation machine in the US, is there were many skilled, but there were many that were refugees that weren't, that came with nothing. Absolutely nothing.
And no background skill and everything.
No background skill, who are amongst the most successful business people in the US today, are many of them. You see this of the Iranians, you see it of the Jewish refugees in the US, you see it of people from all over, the Swedish, many others were very, very entrepreneurial and are sort of at the heart in a way of what one imagines the US dream to be, which is you can start with nothing and create something. And that, I think, also applies elsewhere.
Okay. So, but do you think that was also possible because of the state is giving the people the opportunity?
It's in the US, it's exaggerated, this dream. I mean, obviously, many people in the US are very poor, and in fact, poverty is increasing. And if you're born into a poor family in the US, you are likely to stay poor. But this isn't true of the immigrants into the US. They are the exception to this story. So they are more likely to fulfill the American dreams than than people that are second or third or fourth generation American. It's, you know, Europe is different because there's a very strong welfare state, because there's a great support, which I think is a good thing for people. That costs money, it costs taxpayers money. But when you look at the data and the analysis of the input-output into the tax and expenditure, immigrants also come out very well. And the reason is that immigrants are disproportionately active, economically active, tend to be single, active people in their active years. And that means they depend less on the state.
Do you think that social welfare, and we have a strong social welfare system in Europe, is slowing migrants down in progressing here, in trying to build the business and trying to do the innovation that we obviously for economic reasons seek?
No, there's no evidence that it is. I think one needs to safeguard against abuses of the system, people claiming when they shouldn't, etc. But I think, if anything, a more rapid assimilation, more rapid schooling, ensuring good health, tutoring in the language, in other respects, is highly beneficial. One of the major problems with the refugee system, at least in the UK, I don't know about in Austria, is we don't allow refugees to work while they're applying for refugee status. This means they have to be dependent while they're waiting, and the process can take years. I think we should try as hard as we can to make them productive in our societies as quickly as we can, and that requires many things. There's no evidence, by the way, that social welfare slows down innovation. The countries in Europe that have the best social welfare are also the most innovative, like Denmark and Sweden, are amongst the biggest innovators in Europe. And there's some interesting economic papers on this, but one of the explanations is that if you are worried about becoming unemployed and losing your home and not having any money, you don't innovate because you can't take risk, you can't change, you can't start a new business. And it's the social welfare system which allows you to take risk and to be innovative. And certainly there's no evidence of the opposite, which is a weaker social system, social welfare system, would lead to a stronger innovation machine. There's no evidence of that.
But do you think we should start now looking for the high potentials, kind of like, or will it be in 20 years we need anybody, you know?
Well, I think, you know, who you need changes over time. It partly depends on your demographics. It depends also on the economy, the state of the economy. Obviously, if you have a lot of unemployed young people in your society that are nationals, citizens, you don't want to bring a whole lot more people in. It's also the case that Europe is a wonderful, the only experiment I'm aware of in the world, where Europe has voluntarily removed border controls. And that is, for economists like me, a very interesting thing, because everyone always says you can't remove border controls. Everyone will just move to wherever the wages are highest or the social security is biggest or whatever. But what we see, and we particularly saw it in the depths of the euro crisis that was in 2010, 2011, 2012, where there were places in Spain and in Greece where youth unemployment was 60, 70, 80%. Now, you look about what share of those people moved to, say, where there was a better social welfare system in Germany or Sweden or something. No one moved, basically, or very, very few people moved, because the welfare system is one thing, but family and network is more important when you're unemployed. And you certainly don't want to move to a cold climate where you don't know anyone and don't have a home to sleep in. So what Europe shows us is that you can actually have a very open migratory system, but very low levels of migration within Europe. But the economic differences within Europe are huge between the highest income, you know, the factors of four of the richest countries to the poorest countries. So you have a very interesting thing. The question is, why don't more people move in Europe? They don't. Only about, I think, 4% of Europeans move.
Das war der Tag 3 unseres Kongressjournals zum Hören. Eva Winreuter und ich, Anna Wallner, melden uns wie gesagt noch bis zum 1. September jeden Morgen um 6 Uhr früh live aus Alpbach. Wenn Sie keine Folge verpassen wollen, dann abonnieren Sie uns doch im Podcatcher Ihrer Wahl oder Sie hören uns gleich in der Presse-App. Und wenn Sie uns etwas ausrichten wollen oder eine Anregung, eine Idee zu diesem Podcast haben, dann schreiben Sie uns unter podcast@diepresse.com. Vor allem aber, wenn Sie mögen, was Sie hier hören, dann sagen Sie das bitte gerne weiter. Bis morgen.
Presse Play. Was in Alpbach wichtig ist.